Hey there. Welcome to ATL in 29, the podcast that looks at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. My name is Kevin Chouinard. I'm here with Tyler Jones. And last night, the Hawks played their first game of the regular season, a 126-107 loss to the New York Knickerbockers. What'd you think, Tyler?
It was exciting at first, first game, all that good stuff. And then the second quarter happened, and that's probably as bad as it can get. But, overall, it was fun. It's good to have basketball back in our lives, real games that actually matter that we can, really dive into and talk about. But, it wasn't too exciting if you're a Hawks fan, but there were some positives to take from it, nonetheless.
Well, let's be optimists and look at some of the positives before we trash the negatives. What were some of the positives?
Well, positives, probably say, Trae Young, second half, I think he was pretty solid. Really found his flow into the game, whereas the first half he kind of let the Knicks get into him too much, where in the second half he was playing his game. He got some defensive rebounds that led to some easy fast break points. That's something that that might be a trend that they might try to work into with future games, just him leading the fast break. Taurean had a good, shooting night offensively. The shot is there 100%. He can make it looks like his jumper is very versatile. He can make a bunch of, just jump shots from different angles, different release points. That's great to see. Amari Spellman played well. And that was big for him because, to me, I think he really struggled in the preseason. Last night, he played with some energy and some athleticism that was – he played with energy and athleticism from a guy his size that was missing throughout the night. And then, Ken Bazemore. He's good. He's just a pro, And, if this game would have been a lot worse if Ken Bazemore wasn't on the floor, because he's a very good basketball player. He had some plays where he was probably doing a bit too much. You can say that about basically everybody on the team. But overall, they're not as bad as that second quarter, really, or as the score indicated. I think, to me, it felt like in the second quarter they let the game get away from them, and then they compounded mistakes with more mistakes, and it just – They played like a young basketball team and not like a professional basketball team in the second quarter. And that kind of killed any chance they had. They showed some heart to come back in the third quarter. The end result is the end result. But, there were some good things. Oh, and also I think I was impressed with what, even though Kevin Herter only played 4 minutes, it was good to see him be assertive, grab some rebounds, push the break. He had some nice little passes that weren't converted for field goals. So, really, it was good to see him just, make an imprint on the game, something, right. He kind of did, like he would do one every other game in the preseason. So, I think I wouldn't be surprised if overall, I think, I don't know if you disagree or not, you could probably see LP – Lloyd Pierce switched things up with his rotation just due to the fact that, it's still early. Like, they've only been the first day of training camp was October 1st.
Right.
And, these things just take time. And, when you're missing three rotation players, two of them starters, and probably their best player, John Collins, like, it's going to be a struggle. And it's probably going to, I wouldn't be shocked if they have a bounce back game. They're better than what they showed. We can get into the negative now, because, there were some, but, overall it was a pretty bad game for the Hawks.
Okay. That's a lot to process. I want to talk about the positives too, but you said something about, You thought I'm ready to get off track in like the first 2 minutes. You think Lloyd Pierce can switch up the rotation even with all the injuries? There's some sort of alternative there?
Yeah, just probably I could just see him being flexible like he was in the preseason. You know how some games it was Herter, the first wing, or, you know, Herter over Dorsey.
Okay.
And then it was Dorsey over Herter. Like, I could see stuff like that continuing. Like, I could probably see Amari Spellman getting more burn over Miles Plumlee, who, I mean, again, like, it's just... Yeah. I mean, Miles Plumlee is Miles Plumlee. Enough has been said about him. But, you know, you could probably see Amari Spellman, even with all his flaws, just getting more burn. And, like, I wouldn't be shocked if Alex Porteous was starting over Vince Carter even as soon as the next game, just because it became very obvious early on that Vince defensively is just not, you know, it felt like you felt like to me, it just felt like there was just this big gap at the power forward position where they couldn't grab a contested rebound in the first half. And, you know, Vince, you know, he's a vet. He knows where he's supposed to be, but the athleticism just isn't there. And really, overall, you could really see the Hawks missing John Collins athletically on both ends of the floor. They really didn't have anybody who could make up for somebody else's mistakes. You know, somebody gets beat, and that was basically it. And it was just a snowball effect where guys were being really passive defensively in the first half. They didn't get into ball handlers. They weren't physical. They were too scared of fouling, which in turn led to easy drives into the rim or open looks from three. It's just, you know, they seem to just be struggling overall. And I think, you know, with Alex Lynn maybe being slowed by a back strain, and Vince Carter just, you know, he's just not there athletically. He's not what you want athletically as a starting power forward. Even though overall, I think Vince, for what the Hawks wanted Vince to do, I think he had a pretty good game. It's just that what they need is more. And I think Porteous, you know, he made some mistakes too. But you know, athletically, he is there, and like defensively, he probably gives them a better chance.
Okay.
And it just goes back to my main theme probably is pause that, you know, it's so early, like, you know, it's still experimenting time with the rotation. Like, nobody's good enough to, you know, the guys on the bench outside of Jeremy Lin aren't really good enough to not, you know, to get guaranteed minutes. So
sure,
he can, you know, it's early. This is a young team. You can always experiment, see what works and what doesn't. And right now we're in the experimental phase.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that you mentioned early on, you're like, the Hawks are down three of their rotation players, two that are starters. I'm assuming you're saying that Dedmon is a starter, Collins is a starter, and that Anderson is the piece that matters off the bench.
Yeah, because you could really see when Bazemore went off the bench, when Bazemore came off the floor.
Yep.
They just didn't have anybody, you know, play with the type of force you need on the perimeter.
Right, because at that point, I mean, I like literally wrote it down. It's like your 2, 3, and 4 at that point were Dorsey, Prince, and Carter. And if those are your three, you know, wing type players, you know, not your point guard, not your center, but the other three that are trying to do stuff as far as fighting over screens and things like that, they're just not forceful enough. That team is going to kind of get toyed around with a bit.
And, I mean, I think that was basically the game there, because it was just, you know, it's not like they were playing with low effort. I think the effort was there, right?
More or less.
What I mean is side to side effort, but physically it wasn't there. They were playing, you know. To me, I think this goes to you know, Prince, while he shot well, I don't think he had a good game. Defensively, he and Trey, like both he and Trey Young, to me, were really passive on the defensive end. Those are two guys that have to, like, you know, they're not, you know, in one-on-one isolation, they're not really, you know, they're not the best. But that said, they have shown that they can be pretty good as help defenders, digging down on guys, getting steals, getting, you know, with Torian Prince in particular, getting blocks. And it, to me, it just felt like Torian was late on a lot of stuff. He was just, he was a step, he wasn't reading what was happening on the floor. He wasn't really, you know, he had a couple times where he got, you know, he got beat as the help defender because he was just a step late. And it's just something, you know, from him in particular, being a 3-year veteran, you know, in the league, he should know better, right? And it's just, you know, really from him, he has to play with more physicality defensively. Like he's a big guy. He's 6'8", over 220. Like there's no reason why he can't, you know, play with more force defensively.
Sure.
I think he was probably the biggest disappointment on the night, even though he shot even though offensively he was great.
Uh-huh.
Like I have high expectations for him.
Yeah.
And it's just like defensively, it's, you know, the Knicks don't have, it's not like it's not like he was guarding Tim Hardaway. He was guarding the right. other guys. Like when you're going up against Frank Ntilikina, there is no reason why you should be allowing him to dribble. Mm-hmm. You know, put some heat on him. You know, play with some force on him. Force him to make, you know, to make a difficult dribble, you know, make a difficult decision, force him to make a move. Like he was just allowed, like both he and Trae Young were both just allowing the guy they were guarding to really have an easy get to their spot and just do whatever they wanted, even though, you know, box score wise, the guys they were guarding really didn't have that, you know, they had solid games, but
yeah,
you know, Kent Bazemore can't be the only one.
That's
playing with some pressure defensively, and you're not going to get it from Tyler Dorsey because he just doesn't have the foot speed, and you know I think that kind of showed. Vince Carter doesn't have the foot speed anymore, and you know without and this is where you know not having John Collins on the floor, you know John Collins in the game kind of hurts them because it's where you know all right, somebody gets beat, you know John Collins is going to try to show up and try to you know. Contest and block a shot or, you know, get back, you know, just play with, for all of John Collins' faults, like defensively, he plays with the type of force you want from your big men.
Sure.
And that was something that they were not getting from Vince Carter. And, you know, but you can't, you know, at the same time, it's like, you got to have reasonable expectations for what you're trying to get from Vince Carter. You're not looking for that. He provided what you wanted, which is a spacer on the floor and a guy who, if you play a switching style defense, is pretty solid.
Switching doesn't matter. I mean, here's the, you know, that's exactly the thing is that they weren't able to play a switching defense. I think that's when you look at that 49-point quarter, They weren't able to switch. And the reason they're not able to switch is because, you know, their two most irreplaceable players at this point are Trae Young and Alex Len. And when those two guys are involved, if they're either end of the pick and roll or a dribble handoff, if Trae Young is involved, if Alex Len is involved, or if both are involved, it's not a switching play anymore. Especially with respect to Alex Len. I thought, you know, I disagree with you a little bit. I really don't think Trae Young was a defensive problem almost at all. Like, I sat there and, like, watched all these plays again, you know, in careful detail, you know, rewinding. I don't think Trae Young was the problem. But I think it was the biggest problem was, honestly, I thought, in my opinion, whoever was playing with Alex Len in these dribble handoffs and pick and roll plays. Because when you play Alex Len, your pick and roll coverage pretty much has to be a drop coverage. You know, it's the way that the Spurs use Powell. You know, it's what you're going to do. It's the way the Clippers are going to use Boban, that kind of stuff. You know, it's he's just got to shuffle his feet back, and he's got to make sure that both players in the pick and roll, that neither one of the two gets a layup. But then it's incumbent upon the other player in that pick and roll defense to fight over it. You know, the other player has to get skinny, get over the top of the screen, chase off any kind of jump shot, and then, you know, you do the best you can to mess up their floater game. Now, if they hit 25 floaters, great. I mean, you just kind of tip your hat, because if you have to play that defensive coverage, you know, the floater is the one thing that you kind of have to concede a little bit. Now, there are various levels of how you might be able to contest it, but that's the one thing that you're going to have to give up if you're going to have to give up something and you play that way. And, you know, hats off to the Knicks, especially Enes Kanter in that second quarter. He set so many freaking good picks. Like, he's, you know, he was just plowing guys and just not letting them get over. You know, and it wasn't just Dorsey. You know, he got a bunch of guys. He got Baze a couple times. He got Trey once. He got, you know, he got Vince Carter a couple of times. There was one where Baze didn't want to get stuck on the pick, went under it. And, of course, when you do that, if it's a good three-point shooter, you just kind of step back and shoot. It was Hardaway, and he was already cooking, so he took a step back, hit a three. And so, you know, that was a misplay. So Enes Kanter was, you know, really making his presence felt in that second quarter, because the Hawks, you know, playing that drop pick and roll coverage, they couldn't fight over it. You know, they were getting body on body, getting stuck, and, you know, you're not going to shut out the opposition. They're going to get some points, and like I said before, you know, if those points come in the floater game, that's pretty much the best you can do. You try to chase it from behind, you try to wave at it, but if he kind of turns the corner, and, you know, the guy fighting over the top gets behind you a little bit, that floater is going to be there. And, you know, it's the thing you have to concede if you play that way. And Hardaway and Trier, you know, they did a really good job making those types of shots. But, you know, sometimes the Hawks fought over it and the Knicks scored. And then there were a bunch of times that the Hawks didn't fight over it and the Knicks scored. And I think those were the really disappointing plays. And Kanter in particular is kind of a unique player, because he's a really good offensive player. Like, in addition to the pick setting, you know, at the beginning of that 49-point avalanche in the second quarter, he was making it so that the Hawks couldn't box him out. Like, they just couldn't box him out without fouling. So, you know, the Hawks would get a stop, shot would be missed, and then they'd try to go get the rebound, and they'd foul Kanter. And the Knicks would get another possession and score. And that happened a few times at the beginning of the quarter. So, like, Kanter caused all these problems for them. And maybe it wasn't just Kanter. It might have been Vonley, too. But the Hawks couldn't box out. And at that point, I mean, the Knicks are a funny team, because, you know, you look at what they do, especially playing a guy like Kanter. He's going to give you problems. They're going to be good offensively when they play Kanter. He can shoot. He can set picks. He's a monster offensive rebounder. What you have to be able to do when you're playing against Kanter is make them pay at the other end. You have to be great offensively so that when they put Kanter out there, you're roasting Kanter on the other end and making it so the Knicks coach is thinking, Fizdale, do I have to take him out? Because right now it's not looking good defensively. And I thought the Hawks were really bad in that second quarter, spacing-wise. Because what the Knicks were doing defensively is they were playing...
Oh, yeah, the spacing was terrible.
It was terrible.
Like, that was...
Yeah, in particular, like, when Poitras was out there.
Poitras and Miles Plumlee can't play those two together. I think they played a couple minutes, but...
Yeah, I don't know if they played together. But Poitras was getting in the way.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Third guy defending the pick and roll. Like, if it was a Trae Young, Alex Len pick and roll, that's a great play. You know, that's been, you know, the bread and butter for the Hawks all preseason, was Trae Young, Alex run, and Len running a pick and roll. And so the Knicks are defending that with three players. They're defending it with Trae Young's guy. They're defending it with Alex Len's guy. But then they're just taking Poitras' defender and just planting him in the paint. And Poitras has to be patient enough to just wait in the corner and shoot that shot. And instead, he's trying to do back cuts that aren't working. He's timing them wrong. So he's like, you know, Torian threw a bunch of bad passes, but one of them, was when Poitras made a bad cut. Poitras cuts, and then all of a sudden, instead of being open because the Knicks are using three guys to defend the pick and roll, Poitras is on the baseline behind some guy. Taurean has no place to put the ball when he gets in trouble because there's three guys defending him, and one of them is actually able to defend him and Poitras at the same time, and he just kind of throws it to a Knick. The Knicks take it, go get a fast break bucket. So, like, Poitras, you know, he's not a bad shooter. He's a good shooter, but he's got to trust it more, and he's got to be smarter about it. You know, he had a G League season where he shot 40% from three. I don't know if teams are going to take him seriously as a three-point shooter, but if they don't, shoot it, make it. Make the points and make him pay because he's a good shooter. But he was getting in the way. There was another time when the Knicks switched, and I think he had Trey Burke on him. And, you know, while he had Trey Burke on him, Alex Len and Trae Young are trying to run a pick and roll. Trey, you know, gets the pick, turns the corner, and as he's trying to drive towards the rim, Poitras is trying to post up Burke right in Trae Young's lane as Young's trying to drive. I mean, the spacing was awful. And so, you know, the Knicks are going to score some points when Cantor's out there, but the Hawks did a bad job of making them pay on the other end, because they were playing with a power forward who just wasn't spacing the floor, and they were letting the Knicks just take the pick and roll and destroy it. And honestly, I thought Trae Young was fantastic, because even in all this crap fest of a spacing show, he wasn't making bad passes. You know, he was still making decisions that were, you know, defensible decisions. Like, it's not like the Hawks were lighting anybody up offensively in that second quarter, but he still wasn't putting the ball in places of jeopardy, so to speak.
I agree with you with a lot of what you said. I thought Alex Poitras in the first half was mucking the game up a bit. You could say probably the same with Bembry as well. The spacing was a lot better in the second half. They looked like the team we saw in the preseason, where, you know, guys stayed, had their feet planted outside the 3-point line, and they were hunting 3-point shots instead of what they were doing in the first half. To me, like, I don't think Alex Lynn had a bad game. Like, He wasn't good on either end of the floor. I hear what you're saying on the drop back, but
yeah, he might need to take another step up.
Cantor, yeah, he just didn't play with the he just didn't have a good game. Like, Cantor kind of beasted him on the boards, got him in the early foul trouble, and
right,
like he just didn't really have an impact on the game on either end of the floor. I thought he could have been better defensively. And to your point,
and we should point out that Len is hurt. Like, he took a fall on that dunk a week ago. He played and practiced, you know, whatever immediately afterward. But then I think it was the realization, you know, a couple days later of, he's actually sore now. And, you know, he showed up in the injury report with a sore back. So, you know, I don't think he's practiced much the last couple of days. I think he's pretty much, you know, kind of went into that game kind of cold, having not really practiced much over the last few days.
Yeah, I think he might have been playing a bit injured, but, you know, at the same time, you know, if you're out there playing,
yep, Cantor, you know, pushed him around
so much. Yeah, Cantor just kind of pushed him around, and then, like, defensively, he didn't really play with the force you would like from your center.
I honestly think his partners were worse.
Well, yeah, that's true, but this goes back to what I was saying about Trae Young and Taurean Prince just being bystanders, right? Where, you know, playing.
Even Bazemore, as good as he played, you know, didn't, in that second quarter, you know, died on some of those screens.
That's fair, but that's where you're supposed to get some help, where somebody's just supposed to do a quick flash. Like, the Knicks don't have such a great pass where you can't help and recover to your man, right?
Okay.
Like, there's no reason why the Hawks should be playing 2-on-2 with the Knicks as if it's Steph Curry and they're playing the Warriors or the Rockets. Like, it's like, come on, like, you know, help off Milikina, help off Trey Burke. Like, if Trey Burke is going to beat you, you know, let him beat you, but don't give up such, you know, pr- practice shots where guys are just coming off screens with a nice rhythm, like disrupt their rhythm a bit, help out a bit with your guys. And I like, to me, they were just passive. Like, they weren't reading the passing lanes. They weren't digging down. They were just letting the game happen.
Okay, but that's not on Len. The Knicks weren't doing it at the rim.
No.
He was bad as a rebounder. He wasn't really bad as a defender.
Yeah, I mean, just overall, like, and I think where you can see with Alex, if we're getting to Alex Len, like, his biggest, like, his worst aspect was his screens. Like, he just didn't set. Like, the screen setting wasn't there. He set better screens in the preseason. That's where I go back to. He's probably playing injured, but, you know, at the same time, the Hawks are the walking wounded right now where, you know, again, they're missing three guys. And, you know, it's not at some point, you know, this team is only so deep. But, yeah, you know, this team really needed John Collins tonight. I feel like a lot of,
oh, absolutely.
You know, maybe they don't win this game, but not having him hurt them in ways that, you know, people don't understand. Like, if nothing else, he would have got some offensive rebounds just to help out when the offense is struggling.
It would be entirely different.
He would have caused some havoc. And so too much was put on Trae Young's plate. That said, I'm not going to excuse Trae Young's game. To me, I felt like he was, like, overall, he let the Knicks, he allowed the Knicks to take away what he does best, which is his three-point shot. He settled for too many floaters. Like, he has a nice floater game, but that shouldn't be, you know, his primary focus. I felt like, to me, he didn't work hard enough off the ball. And, like, to me, overall, it just felt like, really, in the first half, like, the guys didn't have trust in each other to make the right decisions. So it was a bunch of, you know, it was a bunch of your turn, my turn stuff that, you know, that it can happen sometimes. But it was a lot better in the second half. Like, they looked like the team we thought they were going to be to come into the season. But, you know, second quarter, you know, really what killed them was the turnovers and not giving up offensive rebounds to the Knicks. Like, they couldn't get a stop. And then when they did get the ball, it was live ball turnovers where it was just easy layups on the other end. So, you know, they got to clean that up. The simple mistakes, the fouls, like too many dumb, careless fouls on the Hawks end where they're just giving points away. Too many fouls, too many really bad turnovers that were caused either through bad spacing or just bad decision making from the ball handlers. Just too much, not enough quality play, not enough movement, not enough quality screens being set. Just a bad game. And this overall, like, they played poorly. Hopefully, you know, they watch the film and be like, man, we didn't really play our game until the second half.
Yeah.
And then even in the second half, they just couldn't they couldn't get enough stops, right? They went on a quick little run, they brought it down to 13, but, you know, they really couldn't string together stops after that point. And it was just basically, well, you're just not gonna win if you can't put the type of defensive pressure that you need to make. But, you know, I wouldn't get too bogged down into what happened. To me, I think.
I want to get bogged down.
No, I mean, not bogged down, probably just pessimistic.
Oh, okay, okay.
About the season. And really, like, to me, really just get, you know, it's the first game, and it's a young team. You know, they're trying, you know, Trey's trying to figure out, still trying to figure out this, you know, this NBA game. But at the same time, you know, to me, you can't allow Trey Burke to guard you, you know, put full court pressure on you. You know, let's actually, one thing I wanted to note.
Okay.
You know, they were pressing Trae Young a bit, like, really early and often, where they're putting full court pressure when the Hawks inbounded the basketball.
Okay.
And nobody would set, like, a simple screen to free them up.
Yeah, it got a little dicey. Torian got the ball a couple times, and it got a little dicey.
Yeah, somebody, they put pressure on the ball handler, and nobody would set an early screen. That stuff you don't, you know, that stuff you would not expect from an NBA basketball game.
But that's so easy to clean up. They'll.
Yeah, exactly. There was no, like, you know how they do when the inbounder inbounds the basketball, guy's pressing, and he runs in front of the, you know, defender, sets a moving screen, but they'll never call that. Like, even that wasn't being said. So it was a lot of stuff. It was a lot of easy stuff that should have been corrected, where they were just making the game harder than it needed to be. Overall, I felt like if you want to pin down what went wrong, it was just a lot of small stuff that, you know, if it was December, you could be disappointed. But, you know, right now it's so early, and these guys are, like, you know, they don't know each other's rhythms all that well. So it's just going to take time. But, you know, overall, it wasn't as bad as the score said. Like, the Hawks aren't this bad of a basketball team. They're better than this. They know this. But I will say they really need Alex Poitras to play smarter offensively. If anything else, like, they just got to tell him, hey, because I agree with you. Like, I watching the game, like, offensively, it was a hassle. Even though, you know, when they went small with him at the five, I think that was probably their – that's when they were going on a little mini run. They were switching. Right. They played with some force, and they had spacing because, you know, you're not playing with Alex Glenn anymore. And, like, it was just a lot of guys just not being positioned where they needed to be on the floor.
Right. And Pierce, credit to Pierce, he made a good adjustment. Like, he saw this whole spacing fiasco happening, and at one point, you know, he's just like, you know, forget it, you know, switch it. We're going to make Poitras the screen, or let Poitras roll to the hoop and stick Alex Len in the corner. And that was a little bit better. Len didn't make his shots, but at least it wasn't a fiasco anymore.
Yeah, and I think that might be something they may want to look towards more towards, especially if Alex Len may be a bit hampered.
Right.
You know, there's no reason to, you know, the shots still look great. The attempts he got, you know, the shot looked good, just didn't make them.
Right.
You know, that might be something where, you know, Alex Poitras, you know, since he's a guy who likes to move. So, like, you know, have him set good screens and roll to the rim and, you know, really cause havoc. So,
yeah, he's athletic enough to make people crazy if he's got a head of steam.
Exactly. And this probably goes back to my original point where you can probably see Herter and Spellman play more. Herter, just due to the fact that he's bigger, he can grab a contested rebound. Mm-hmm. Like, it's weird. Tyler Dorsey's a great rebounder, but at the same time, you know, he's a great rebound for his position, but when you're 6'2", you can get beat up a bit, whereas Herter has a bit more size. He just has a bit more of a chance to tip a ball out to somebody else. I liked what he did in the last 5 minutes of the game. I know it was in a blowout, but, yeah, you know, he's young. Spellman.
Because look who he's replacing. I mean,
yeah, and they need Spellman out there for his shooting
right
at the moment, right? That's the biggest thing, because it became abundantly clear.
I mean, I think I'm higher on Spellman than you are. I think Spellman can do absolutely everything right now except guard a power forward. So if you're playing him at center, I'm all for it. And I think you should be playing him instead of Plumlee, because Plumlee was really bad the last 3 minutes of the second quarter. Like, you know, that second quarter, you know, they got outscored by 24 points. It was never, you know, that any point at which the Hawks stopped the bleeding. So in that last 3 minutes, you know, Plumlee whiffed trying to set a screen, and that led to a turnover that led to a fast break dunk because he just didn't set the pick. There was another time, you know, Cantor roasted him in the post. There was another one, he fell for a dribble handoff, a fake dribble handoff. And so both Hawks are, you know, trying to guard the guy that's receiving the dribble handoff, but the dribble handoff never happened. Cantor dribbles 25 feet from the perimeter all the way in for a dunk because both Hawks, you know, went flying after a handoff that never happened. And so that last few minutes, Plumlee was not good in the second quarter. And, you know, the lead went from, I don't know, whatever it was. I think it went from like 15 to 23 while Plumlee was out there floundering.
Yeah. I mean, again, you don't like Plumlee's Plumlee.
Right. I mean, I don't want to.
You know, at the same time, I understood why Plumlee was getting minutes early.
Wait, why? You know, I mean, I think I have an opinion, Tanner, but I want to hear yours. Why?
Because, you know, he's big and he can keep Tanner off the glass, and that's what was killing him. But at the same time, he's just such a negative everywhere else, including the fact that he's really not even that good of a defensive. Like, he's not even that good of a box out guy either.
Right.
Just a big body. Like,
he's just, you know, good at
it's
going
one of those
it.
Things. But I mean, Spellman was terrible in the preseason. Like, and you know, you just, at this point, you're just playing a numbers game where it's like, all right, either I go with the veteran or I go with the rookie who wasn't good in the pick. Like, he was really bad defensively in the preseason. And he's kind of like, I don't trust him. I'm going to go with the vet. And it burnt them. But, you know, ultimately, like, Plumlee's not why they lost by 20 points or they gave up 49 points in the game, even though, like, he was a reason why it was as bad as it got. But, you know, this, like, I'm not going to put the blame all on him.
Oh, not all of it, no.
You know?
Sure.
Alex Lynn wasn't good either, right? You know, he might have been hurt, but he was bad. I mean,
that's apples and oranges, though. Like, Len wasn't Alex Len, but he wasn't anywhere near what Plumlee did.
I mean, that's fair. He's not Alex Len. That doesn't make it. I mean, he wasn't as good as what we expect him to be, but he was bad. Mm-hmm. You know, Porteous, he got better in the second half, but he was bad in the first half. Vince Carter defensively was just getting roasted. Like, he just didn't have a chance. Like, the team just couldn't grab a rebound with Vince Carter.
Yeah, that was
game.
That was a big problem.
That, you know, it went, when Vince Carter was in,
the rebounding
was not. It was just they had no chance at grabbing a contested rebound. And
right.
That was the difference in the game, right? And it's like,
I mean, it was,
well,
one of many things.
Spellman, like, to me, Spellman probably had the best game out of all the bigs, and you know, he only played 8 minutes, and I don't think he would have made that big of a difference overall to the game. That said, it was good to see him play. He also had a pretty good matchup going up against Canner and Vonleh, where two guys who can't really hurt him with quickness. You know, he's bit like he provided the athleticism, size, strength that was missing from Alex Lynn overall. And then he also can space from the floor. So, to me, and that's where I go back to the original point where, you know, I imagine Lloyd Pierce's rotations are going to be pretty fluid for a while. It's just, you know, he doesn't know. Like, he just doesn't know, and it hurts him. It really hurts him that, you know, he's missing three guys he expected to be in the rotation. I know we talked about in a previous spot about Justin Anderson maybe not being the eighth guy or ninth guy or whatever. But to me, it's like, you know, he's just another athletic big wing that the Hawks, you know.
Yes. I think
right
he'll,
now it's just, it's Torian Prince, and that's it for big size wings. You know, Kent Bazemore plays bigger than he is, but, you know, he's not that big. And, you know, Bembry.
He really should be the backup three.
Yeah, for all of Bembry's strength, you know, he's not that tall either.
No, Bembry should be the backup too.
Exactly. So it's just where, you know, they just aren't playing with a full deck, and the guys they got behind them are you know, rookies or second year players that, you know, Pierce probably doesn't trust. You know, it's not nothing much else to say. I think they'll be. Even though Memphis is probably a better team than the Knicks, they're probably going to play better, if for no other reason that the Grizzlies don't have, you know, they really don't have the wing talent to punish the Hawks right now, who are pretty thin at the moment at the wing spot. So, you could potentially see a bounce back game.
Oh, I don't know. I'm nervous just because I think the Grizzlies can be so much better defensively than what the Knicks were. I think the Knicks were just
I think you are overestimating how good the Grizzlies are.
Okay.
Outside of Mike Conley. Like
that's true. Yeah, Conley's great.
He's coming back from an Achilles injury. I mean, it's not a preview for the next game, but it's, you know, or a Grizzlies pod, but it's just like their backup is Shelvin Mack. And speaking of backups,
I will have no Shelvin Mack slander. You can't just punch that in and run away.
I mean, he's bad, so it's
fine. Stop.
Jeremy Lin just, you know, he didn't play with any explosion. Didn't really have an impact on the game. Yeah, he didn't take anything away.
Right. But, well, the only thing he took away was, like, there were a couple of times where the Knicks just, they didn't even set a pick. They're just like, okay, you're being guarded by Jeremy Lin. See what you can do. And he just kind of got beat.
Yeah, he was bad defensively.
But that other than, said, like, I think, offensively, I thought, you know, he always made the right decision. Like, you know, he didn't, like, blow by anybody, but, you know, he felt like he was in control of the game, even if it was kind of a weak control.
Yeah, but that's the issue, right? You're not generating good looks.
Right. I mean, that'll be so much better when you have explosive bigs. Like when you're basically playing Alex Len and a bunch of stopgaps. He needs a little help in the pick and roll game, and that's where, you know, Bembry can come in and take over some of the possessions, and it'll just get better when Collins is out there or somebody else. You know, Deadman, anybody, take your pick.
Yeah, in general, like, this idea that this isn't, like, big don't matter anymore, that they're, you know, here's the thing. There are a bunch of quality big men in the NBA today.
Yes.
But if you don't have one on the floor at every second of every minute of a basketball game, you're just not going to win possession.
Yes.
And I think if you really want to boil down what happened, is that the Hawks big men were just all, like, for 42 minutes were just not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's probably going to be a concern, like, until, you know, Collins and Deadman come back.
Right. I mean,
and if Lane gets, hopefully Lane gets better, healthy, but I think, and that's where I say I think the Hawks are going to play better. You know, I don't think Alex Len. I think Alex Len's going to play with a bit more force against Marc Gasol. He's not, you know, Gasol's not the physical presence that Cantor is, and you know he can probably ease his way into the game better than what was happening, and hopefully he can set better screens and all that good stuff and be healthier.
Gasol was kind of a problem for him in that preseason game. It was almost the same thing where it was like. The Hawks couldn't get a rebound without fouling in that Grizzlies game at the beginning. I mean, I hope it's different, but I mean, if we're just going to look at
that,
what happened,
that was a weird game.
Okay,
I don't like.
That's fine.
I mean, they should be able to rebound against this Grizzlies team. That's where it goes back to my point where, you know. Even with Portis, all his flaws, they need to lock down. I think the biggest thing they need to lock down is defensive rebounding. So,
right.
I try to get Portis on the floor, have him be in John Collins' role, rim running, have Lynn in the corner just to start the game, and then bring in Vince Carter when the Grizzlies go to their less athletic, pigs off the bench.
Okay.
You know, guys who can't really punish Vince Carter for being 41 years old. No disrespect to the legend, but
okay.
It is what it is.
Can I add one thing?
Go ahead.
Just a small thing with regard to the injury situation. You know, when Pierce was in Philadelphia and he had Ben Simmons and, you know, a bunch of guys like that, you know, Philadelphia was known for, you know, how often they switched and how good they were with their switching defense. And like I mentioned earlier, when you've got these pick and roll defensive setups, if Trae Young is in it, you're not switching. And if Alex Len is in it, you're not switching. And I think just the injury situation right now makes it so that the Hawks don't have a change of pace defense. You know, one of the things that NBA coaches like to do is if, you know, one particular defensive look isn't working, just give them a different look. And when the Hawks have Alex Len and they don't really have their other bigs, they kept having to play that drop coverage, and they can never really just kind of say, you know what, we need a little bit of a change up. Let's give them this look for a while. They tried it a little bit with Poitras at center and, you know, some trapping, but they don't have a lot of flexibility in terms of different looks that Pierce can roll out, because, you know, if you had Collins, you could try something completely different. If you had Dedmon, you could probably try something different. But when it's just Len, you know, you're limited in, you know, what kind of varieties you can throw out there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're injured, and
yeah,
they need those guys healthy. So hopefully they're back, you know, by November at the, you know, latest. You know, hopefully they're back sooner than that. But we'll see. I don't have any sources on what the recovery time for these guys are.
I mean, Dedmon is at the point where he's doing the non-contact portions of practice. Anderson too. You know, they're both out there, you know, doing the shooting drills and doing the motion drills. But if it's like 5-on-5 contact where they're going to bump into other players, then Anderson and Dedmon are sitting out at this point. So we'll see. And Collins, I don't think has, you know, he's out for now to be reevaluated October, I want to say 22 it is.
Yeah, he had actually something interesting about Collins. Based on the official report, it looks like he aggravated his ankle the first preseason game.
Right.
Because he had the MRI October 2nd.
Correct.
Then they played the Grizzlies on the 3rd.
The 5th. So I think it was the 1st and the 5th.
Yeah, so, exactly. You're right. You're
so
right.
Monday the 1st, they beat the Pelicans. Tuesday the 2nd was the MRI. Friday the 5th was the game against the Grizzlies. He played a half, and then he sat out the second half. But you're right with the timing. It's interesting.
I think my point is that I feel like what happened is either he aggravated it in the Grizzlies game, or somebody up top noticed that he was playing through injury, and they were just like, all right, we're shutting this down until, you know, you're not having any pain. Because they're not playing for a playoff spot. So this is not, right. You know, every win doesn't matter. It's more important that these guys stay healthy. And it's,
sure.
Like, to me, it's good that, you know, I think the point I'm trying to make is that Collins' injury isn't serious, or it's not that it's not serious. It's just, I feel like it's a lot, what they're doing is a lot of preventive work with him in particular, just because of how he plays and why he relies so much on his athleticism. There's really no reason to risk it if they don't have to. And, you know, so what it sounds like is he injured it the first game, then had the MRI, came back on the 5th, re-aggravated, and they were just like, all right, we're shutting this down. We're going to give you an injection or whatever they did with his ankle and hope for the best in 2 weeks or so. So, you know, hopefully he's back. Hope he's back sooner than later, but they're not going to rush it with him or even with Dedmon or Anderson. They're taking it slow with all three of these guys.
Okay. Yeah. I don't have a whole lot more to add here. One thing that I would add is that I thought the pace was good. That was the fastest game in the NBA this season so far. If the Hawks can get some defensive rebounding to go with it, they'll be in really good shape. But they need to get the rebounds.
Agreed. And, you know, I think they found something in the second half that they can take positive looks at and, you know, maybe, you know, build on their second half performance and bring it to the Grizzlies on Friday.
Right. But, right. I mean, and it's weird that we talked about all the nitty-gritty of you know, Plumlee and Poitras and all the other ugliness. Honestly, we haven't talked enough, in my opinion, about Trae Young. Trae Young was good. Like, if there's one big picture thing to take away from this, Trae Young was good. He was playing with a mixed bag that didn't do particularly well, and he still just did Trae Young stuff. Not the best Trae Young stuff, but he did Trae Young stuff, and he didn't make mistakes.
I think he was good in the sense that he was the best the Hawks had, but we've seen better from him.
Oh, and sure.
I don't even think this was his average baseline.
Sure. Right.
There's some stuff he can clean up himself, but, you know, Trae Young being a good prospect isn't anything you don't know if you listen to this podcast. But this, it's only so much we can say about Trae when, the numbers tell a solid game, 14-6-6, not bad, but it's not good either considering the efficiency. But hopefully he cleans it up and has a better game.
And defensively, like, people think, oh, Trae Young's bad at defense. Trae Young is not bad at defense. He moves his feet and he catches up with his defender. He does it over and over again. When the Hawks were getting picked on, it wasn't Trae Young. It was the wings.
And I mean, that's
kind of, I mean,
that's the issue, right? It's just and to me, overall, just team wise, they defensively, they just need to be better.
Sorry, it seems weird that in all the Trae Young hype that it was the other stuff, because it really was the other stuff. The game was dictated on these other things and not on Trae Young. But Trae Young was fine, and we should talk about, at least I thought Trae Young was fine. And I just, big picture, when you look at the Hawks in 2022, what's going to matter from this game is not what Alex Poitras or Miles Plumlee did. It's what Trae Young did, and Trae Young was good.
I think we can end on that note.
Good place to stop.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do this again soon, sir.
No, will do, will do.
you were going to turn me down.
I was going to say no problem, but no problem doesn't really make that much sense.
Oh, all right, all right. So you weren't going to turn me down. All right, have a good one, man.
No, you too.